Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Budiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into a conversation that we've had on a number of occasions on this platform, and that's around the world of banking, but the intersection of banking and technology. And for today, we are very happy to be joined by an expert in the field that is the Group Retail Bank CIO at Standard Bank, that is KK Molabe, and he's also the CIO for Standard Bank South Africa. So we're just going to be just having a discussion around what's happening in his space, some of the big trends that they're seeing, some of the investments when it comes to technology, and some of the things that we see going forward. KK, greetings to you today.
Greetings to you, Mdiwa, and greetings to everybody listening.
No. Thank you so much. I'm at Standard Bank's head office in Johannesburg. That is Rosebank. And, when you're walking around, there's a lot of tech that you see being implemented all over the place. I parked this morning, and there's a system that tells you how many parking spaces are available where, and I'm sure that ties in somehow to when we scan at the entrance. I'm sure the people at reception also know that a person has scanned, and there's all of that stuff. But what I wanted to check in with you about, recently, we saw Standard Bank released its results, recently. And that's why I wanted to just start off, because you guys are fresh, in that cycle. We've just released those results. And we noted a couple of things as Business Day, that Standard Bank reported a 6% increase in digitally active clients in South Africa as more customers transitioned to convenient banking channels. That was for the year to end December. And then outside of that, much of this was driven by, the personal and, private banking unit, which continued to enhance its capabilities to provide seamless experiences and to optimize, cost to serve.
Yes, no, Mdiwa, it's quite a sentence that you have read there. In simplifying it, what we've been focusing on is to do things that simplify our clients' lives. Mm. And we know, and this is also a global trend, that clients prefer to access their services through their mobile app, because that provides them with convenience. Mm. So we've been innovating a lot and investing a lot in making our mobile app the first place for our clients to go. We like to say at Standard Bank that we are not a mobile-only bank. Most of our clients wants to do certain things on the mobile phone, but we also have an extensive network of bankers that also complements that. If you go into the numbers that you've spoken about, we're seeing quite a healthy improvement in terms of adoption of our clients on the mobile app. In fact, that number is sitting just over 4 million customers that are actively using our mobile app. And we think that we will have even more and more clients on using the mobile app as we continue to innovate forward.
What is the, in terms of that digital access, can I confirm that that is the primary way in which people digitally interact with Standard Bank? Because at the end of the day, the banking app is a mobile version of the website, in essence. Because when I started, accessing, services online, from a banking point of view, I remember you used to go to www. And then you get to the actual website on a computer. Then over time, there was a real push. To say, rather do all of this stuff, on the mobile device. So I'm just curious if people are still going to their computers and going to the browser and, all of that stuff.
Yes, no, that's a great question. So what we definitely see is the majority of our customers are primary mobile app users. I think for many reasons, including the convenience of just clicking on the app on your phone, seamlessly getting authentication via your face biometric or your finger biometric, or even those that still want to punch in their password. And also it's a lot easier to navigate, because also convenient, because many people don't carry their desktops everywhere. But we do still have a significant number of customers that prefer to use their internet banking, which they access on their desktop. We've also made it a lot more easy and convenient for those customers, because we can authenticate them via their mobile device, meaning that they can go onto their web and then a QR code will come up, and then they can scan it using their mobile app on the phone, so that authentication is seamless, and then they can go in. Typically, when we talk to our clients, a lot of our clients that want to make multiple payments to multiple people at the same time tends to go onto the web, because they can capture a number of things at the same time and click button. Whereas those that go to the app, which we sometimes look at what we call our daily active and weekly active users, they tend to go in there to do things that relate to how they live their lives on a day-to-day, to make payments, to pay with their phone, and all sorts of things. So we've got both, but majority definitely using the mobile.
It's actually very interesting, you know, to hear that difference in behavior, and I guess some of the reasons why a person would still in 2025 prefer to do certain things, you know, on the web as opposed to, you know, on the mobile app. Just before we started, we were actually talking about the fact that you have more than one, you know, device that you carry around. And you said a big part of it is because you have to, you know, make sure that things are working, you know, from an experience point of view. Talk to us about that, you know, UX design and customer experience, because whenever we talk to people in the banking sector, whenever we talk to yourselves, rivals, as well as consultants, you know, that are experts in the sector, everyone seems to be obsessed at the moment about, you know, this customer experience thing. So maybe you could just talk to us about that.
Yes. So the first thing that we really focus on is talking to our clients very, very early in our process. So we focus on first understanding what is the problem that the client themselves are trying to solve before you get into the solution. Let me give you an example. So one of the things we have done, one of the innovations on the app we have done, is we have enabled our corporate clients that have got customers that have got unclaimed benefits, because they will have been part of a pension fund somewhere, to be able to offer those unclaimed payments seamlessly to our consumer clients. Now, in that example, you see that we started with a problem. We said, okay, what a corporate client of ours has got this problem that they are not able to trace the people. And then we then connect this problem with what could be the benefit for our consumer clients, is that we could give them this seamless way and delight them in terms of them going to the app, and then some of them discovering that I didn't even know that I had this unclaimed benefit. So once we are very clear that we are solving this problem, then we start working on the solution, because we have identified that many people actually have this problem. Then when we are working on the solution, then we start talking to customers again to say, if we were to solve this problem this way, will it work for you?
Yeah.
And then that is then followed by then the science of UX design, in terms of where's that screen gonna be, or how is it gonna look like? Can we have as few clicks as possible so that is convenient for the client, and then they feel that the experience is delighting them?
Yeah.
So in a way, we invest heavily in the science of talking to clients, the science of the prototyping of the solution, as the science of designing the user experience, which, as you know, in technical terms, we'll call it UX design,
yeah,
so that we can get that process seamlessly. But it never ends, because even after we've built the solution, we continue to assess the performance of that solution. Is it taking clients longer to get to it? And then we continue to have a team that refines that and makes it better over a period of time.
Okay. Yeah, it's very interesting, you know, to hear, I guess, some of the thinking around that. And if you'll allow me, right, I think from a full disclosure point of view, I have a couple of bank accounts, but my primary bank account is with Standard Bank. They captured me.
And that is excellent.
You guys captured me as a student. I believe it was orientation week when I was at Rhodes. And I think that is the case with, you know, many of my friends. Whatever bank accounts we registered at that time have almost stayed with us, you know, since. And what I was curious to get your sense on is, I guess, some of the thinking around some of the features. So that's why I was saying, if you'll allow, I'll take a feature that I've experienced and maybe you can walk me through how some of these things happen. Until recently, if I was making a card payment, you enter your details and all of that stuff, but you then go through a 3D processing, and then it will then send a corresponding message to your phone, you know, as a prompt, and then you get to choose yes or no, and then usually either as an SMS or it just pops up as a prompt on your phone, and then, you know, the transaction has been approved. But over the last month, I've noticed that that same process now results in, instead of just a pop-up or an SMS, it's now a notification through my app to say, open the app and just click. It's the same yes or no, but instead of it popping up through an SMS, it's now popping up through the banking app. How and why would you make, I guess, such a change for something that seems small in a way, because the number of steps, I believe, is about the same, except that one is happening through, I guess, on the banking app, the other one is happening, you know, via like an SMS channel.
Yeah, so the way we think about experiences in general, in the past, and you're talking a few years ago, we will think of customers across similar ways in terms of how we engage them. So as and when we move to greater personalization of you, Mudiwa, as a customer, then we start to develop ways to look at your own way of the way you transact and your personal preferences. And in a way, when we start to understand the way you work, and in your example, for example, that you active in the app and that you'll go into the app most of the time and that you enjoy looking at the number of things in the app. In that instance, then we personalize that instance to you from how we authenticate you to what you have described, which is the inbox in the app, because we can see that you are comfortable in the secure screen behind the app. And in a way, even if you are traveling anywhere around the world and you're not roaming on your phone, so you don't have the difficulty that maybe you're not going to get the SMS because then you are not roaming, but you can access your app from anywhere. The secondary benefit of that is that when we send you the message in the app, we also have the opportunity to send you a recommendation of what we might want to engage you in the app, because it's a space that we are able to engage you on a number of things which we can do on the SMS. I can also share with you that that particular experience is perhaps personalized to you and other customers that have other types of personas. But there are customers that will still get different types of combinations. For example, there will still be customers, if they don't use the app, they will still get the SMS. Mm-hmm. And then there will be customers that will also get a different way to validate that that transaction is the right one. And we'll also look at risk factors based on clients. But what I want to emphasize is this is all based on understanding that client and what they are trying to do, and responding to giving them what works for them from a personalized perspective. It doesn't sound like we do that, but there's a lot of science behind how we then decide that this customer will work best with this type of approach.
That's actually interesting, because when I saw that shift, my assumption was that, Standard Bank has now shifted its authentication, you know, to being app-based, but you know, you're talking about, no, it just depends on your behavior and what you're comfortable with. That's actually an interesting, you know, way to, I guess, go about it. And I guess from a security point of view, it makes it a bit harder if you are a bad actor, you know, to almost predict, you know, where is the authentication gonna, what you call this, gonna go. Yeah, it's actually interesting.
Because what we seek to do is to protect our clients, because we really, really value the trust that our clients put in us. And to your point, if you've got the same way to treat every instance, it makes it easier for an attack to actually not only attack the way you work, but attack multiple clients at the same time. And what we really want to do is to keep on iterating in the way we think about protecting our clients.
Okay, cool. There was another stat that I also found interesting. There are a couple. But the other one was, you know, off of what we're talking about around optimizing the cost to serve. Standard Bank noted that digital transaction volumes increased by 10% and branch transaction volumes declined, 24%. What is the place of, I guess, the branch now? I think during COVID, it was almost like, oh, the bank branch is dead. But in 2025, the bank branch is still here. What's the trends that you guys are seeing? Because as you guys have noted, the transaction volumes are going down. What is the role, you know, of the branch, you know, versus a person banking on their mobile device and all of that stuff right now?
So at Standard Bank, we are very clear that we are a digital bank, but as well, at the same time, we are also a human bank. Which means that the way we show up to our clients will be in an omni-channel way. Which means that we make it easier for clients to do or to consume services across our different channels in the way that they prefer to do it. Now, against that definition, what we see is that a lot of transactions that clients can easily do on the app that do not require them to engage with a professional or expert or advisor in the bank, they will go and do in their mobile app. Mm. We also still have a lot of clients, and it will continue that way, that want to sit down and talk to a banker, that want to sit down and talk to an advisor, that want to go to a branch to deal with things where they want to sit in front of somebody and then be assisted. And what is important is that the trend has been that as and when we move out some of the transactions that are on the app, that's where you are seeing the decline. But similarly, there are things that our clients prefer to do in branches or to sit with a relationship manager and a banker. And it's for those interactions that you think of that require you to talk to an expert face-to-face. In a way, you could even say that sometimes you want to eyeball somebody for greater trust about that type of discussion. Yes, because it's your money. Yeah. On the same breath, we also have lots of clients that prefer to call our contact centers. Because for that type of transaction, they still want to talk to somebody, but maybe they don't want to see them face to face. But they want something that must be explained by a person through a dialogue and not necessarily going to read a web page. And then we then assist them in that way. And we will continue to offer an omni-channel experience that goes with preferences of our clients. So we're not one of those banks that will try to drive clients in either direction where they don't prefer to go. That's why we say that we are a digital as well as a human bank.
Okay. No, because obviously there's been a lot of activity in the market, and right now we're seeing the rise of, you know, the neobanks and all of that. And one of the things, you know, that they use as, you know, part of their promotion to say we're digital first and all of that is the fact that they don't have bank branches, right? So I was just also keen to get a sense of, okay, fine, because the trends are towards digital, you know, how you see, I guess, the place of the bank branch, you know, playing out over time.
Yes, no, definitely. In fact, in South Africa, even before I reflect on the rest of the continent, we've seen a number of newer banks that have entered the market with different strategies. you know, I can't comment much about their strategies. Of course, we watch them very closely to see what are they offering in terms of services and the innovations, and whether that's got attraction to our own clients so we can respond where we think that we need to respond. But what we remain convinced that our strategy is the appropriate one for our clients. And the proof points that tell us that is that in South Africa, over the last 3 years, we've been increasing our client base significantly. In fact, over the last 3 years across the personal and private bank in the group, we have increased our customer base in the last 3 years by about 1 million every year over the last 3 years. And you've been quoting stats that talk about reflecting on our increasing number of users that use the app. And there's one more stat I can share with you. In the year 2024, we actually had 1.6 billion logins in our mobile app. That is a crazy number. But it tells you that, I mean, we don't have 1.6 billion clients, but it tells you that our clients, the 16 million clients that we have across the continent are enjoying going into the mobile app and enjoying consuming a whole lot of services. And some of them are, call it banking services in a way where we are assisting them to pay. But some of them are innovations that are adjacent to banking, but they are value-added services that are not necessarily traditional banking. And we'll continue to innovate in that field.
You know, when I hear that stat and you do the quick maths in my head, I'm like, that's an average of 100 logins, you know, per customer. And it's probably more because I'm just averaging it. I'll probably more for certain people like that. And yeah, that's actually quite, that's quite a deep stat. And I'm sure that the infrastructure to make that happen is quite deep. And I want to touch on that. Yes. But before that, I want to touch on the fact that you are in this role that cuts across the continent. We've spoken quite a lot about South Africa, but maybe you could just highlight for us some of the other trends that you're seeing in the personal and private banking space, outside of SA for Standard Bank.
Yeah, I can touch a bit on that. It's a very interesting competitive market, and it's easier to talk about it by regions. Mm. So if you look at West Africa, yeah, we have a presence specifically in the personal and private bank in Nigeria, yeah, where by our own reflections, we are subscale. Okay. So we're investing a lot in growing that business. Yeah. In Ghana as well, where we've got presence. And in Ghana, we're doing very well in terms of, just to share a stat with you, we went from number 6 to number 2 in terms of digital client experience in 2024. In Nigeria, you could almost think of us as a disruptor bank because of our size, but we continue to grow that business. But what we are competing against in West Africa, we've got local banks, and then we've got regional banks as well as multinational banks. Yeah. But the greatest competition we see is also from the network operators.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Yes. Yeah, the mobile money.
The mobile money operators who, have established a lot of investments in the way they compete. Mm. It's very similar to East Africa as well, where we've got growing businesses in Kenya, in Tanzania, in Uganda. In Uganda, actually, we've got quite a big business. We are a leading provider there. But we face a lot of competition as well there from the mobile money operators as well. And that's coming from the telecommunications operator, which is slightly different from South Africa. Mm. Because in South Africa, the mobile money movement has actually been carried by the banks and not the telcos over a period of time, because in a way, maybe banks were first into that space. If I touch a bit on our strategies, across this market, we've leveraged a lot of the investments that we've made in South Africa. As an example, we've taken our award-winning mobile app platform. Yes, we won an award, number one app as part of the Consumer Experience Index survey done last year. And then we use that to have one common platform, but with ability to localize the services to each one. So we then get the benefit of scale of a shared platform, but with the speed of innovation of local context to be able to compete with very, very aggressive competitors in the form of local banks and MNOs.
So the so the platform has the same backend across the group.
Correct. So in those countries, we've got it linked to a common core banking system, and common features such as how you log into the app, how you authenticate. But once you log in into the version in Ghana, you then get into a local version in Ghana, even though it looks the same. If you log into the South Africa one, you get into a South Africa local version. If you go to Uganda, you log into a Uganda one. And that has been the way that we've not only been able to innovate, because we can put common features across all markets at the same time, but also have the ability to compete locally. Not many of our competitors have got the ability to actually do that. And that's what we see as quite a good competitive advantage.
Now we can talk about the infrastructure, because we've spoken about the platform. What's the number? I had actually noted it as well here. 22.4 billion rand, mainly spent, on a number of, different things. I believe that it's software, cloud and technology, and then staff. Are the main cost drivers in your, in the function that you are part of. What's happening behind the scenes to keep the lights on, to keep 16 million customers, what's the word that you use just now? Delighted, by the experience when they log in over 1.6 billion times and all of that stuff. What is the scaffolding that is keeping, everything together?
Yes, so let me first touch on the 22 billion number gets mentioned a lot. I always just say it must always be looked at it in the context of the size of the organization.
No, of course, yes.
It's revenue compared to the competitors and the complexity of operating across so many markets. If you look at our turnover north of 160 billion compared to peers, then you start to get a good understanding when you look at it as a fraction. Yeah. But that number also reflects investments that we continue to do. And I'll touch on a few. The first one is that we've got a solid partnerships with a number of technology companies. So we've got a partnership with Microsoft. We've got a huge partnership with Amazon Web Services, and we've started to do a lot of work, especially in the continent, with Huawei in terms of infrastructure. And the way we are approaching it is we recognize that as technology evolves, there will be more and more available, flexible infrastructure in the form of cloud computing. And we are very clear with our strategy that is the direction that we will take. As it relates to flexible infrastructure, we are going for a cloud-first strategy. And we're doing that via partnering with these hyperscalers. And as you know, a lot of them, if not all of them, have got physical presence of their data centers in South Africa. So that makes it very easier for us. We have seen that as and when we have been driving our strategy of transforming the business in the cloud. The original hypothesis we started with that says that we will improve client experience by doing that is holding. I'll give you an example. One of the things we have done is we have moved all our call center capabilities and now running a cloud native call center in the form of Amazon, what is called Amazon Connect. And we have seen an improvement in all the metrics of client engagement in our call center. Yeah. And our cost of per call of servicing client has come down by more than 50% compared to original. That's just one example. The second one is that we'll continue to improve our security posture by using cloud native solutions. A lot of what I described in terms of this personalization that we do in the app, we're able to do that because of a lot of the innovation that is done by the cloud hyperscaler themselves. And we're able to adopt that, configure it to our client needs. And of course, the third one I want to mention, Mudiwa, which is the most important one. Our business is growing and continues to grow. Yeah. When I talk about that stat of 1.6 billion logins, if your business is growing like that, you want to have a back end that can absorb that growth without growing your cost exponentially.
Yes, and flex upwards.
Correct. And if you look at our cost growth in the organization, in the results that you are referencing, you will see that the cost is not following a double-digit trend compared to the business is growing in terms of customer numbers, volumes, by big numbers, but the cost is actually lower single digits because of this investment that we've made. And we will continue to leverage these partnerships. And as and when they innovate, we will co-innovate with them for the purposes of delighting our clients.
Okay. Now, it makes a lot of sense, and especially the way that you've just described it now, to say when cloud computing was really on the rise, you know, a couple of years ago, there was a lot of hype around it, and people used to wonder, what are the tangible, you know, the actual tangible benefits, and beyond just the technology. So it's always great when you can hear a real world example of a cost benefit that is coming because the infrastructure is provided by the cloud providers. We often talk to cloud providers and they talk about how they have flexible platforms, where you can adjust your level of compute depending on your level of demand. So this appears to me like a real world example of something like that. Where I want to maybe focus on as we round up today's discussion is probably the biggest buzzword right now in technology. That's artificial intelligence. A lot of that is happening in the cloud. So that ties in quite well. November 2022, ChatGPT comes on the scene. AI comes to the fore, becomes very mainstream, but AI has been existing, you know, for a really long time. Some people even trace some of its roots back as far as the 1960s and all of that stuff. But in 2025, where is Standard Bank when it comes to AI? I remember the last time that we spoke, you mentioned, you know, so many of these use cases around AI and all of that, and I'm very keen to get into some of that.
Yes. First, let me just say that as a bank and a technologist, I'm very excited about generative AI specifically, and what we believe at Standard Bank will be quite an impact on humanity in general. And we believe that impact will largely be positive to a greater degree, especially in the African continent, where a lot of growth and development will come from. So as a result of that excitement, we are doing a lot in terms of experimenting and innovating in this regard. We've obviously been doing a lot of things with what I can call traditional AI before the advent of the AI that can also generate. And in fact, I'll give you two examples. So over the years, we've implemented a number of solutions using traditional AIs, where we've got a number of our scientists that will build these models. One of the ones we're proud of is the model that is responsible for our recommendation engine that gives personalized recommendations to our customers, which is millions of recommendations in 2024 that came from that. But in that examples, a lot of the models are built by our scientists, enabled by our engineers, and we have to tune them and put in a lot of work to get them to do. Enter generative AI, where suddenly a combination of this massive compute power that we get from the cloud providers, this large language models that also come on tap, if I can call it, from them, and then this massive data. It's almost like a marriage made in heaven. And then when you put them together, then the ability to start using these GenAI tools. So the first thing I want to say is we've got a number of use cases we're experimenting. A lot of these use cases initially are in how we can improve productivity.
Okay. So this is internal.
Internal, yes. And I'll talk about a few that we have. So, for example, if you go to our app today and you go to the messaging tab, and then you've got a query, what happens is that will have been something that will either have been an email that you send the bank or you left to phone the call center. Yeah. We've got a piece of AI there that will analyze what help you need, and it will be able to work through what is needed to help you. And then if it can't, we've seamlessly connected it to a banker via a chat platform, which is also cloud native from AWS, and then the banker will help you. Okay. Today, we've got about 50% of all of the service requests that go through that AI actually solved by the AI.
Oh, okay.
And then the other 50 is passed on to the bank.
That's a good... That's a
really, yes, and you can start to see that emails are coming down and then this service is going up. The second example I'll give you is that at Standard Bank, we use a Microsoft capability in terms of Office 365 and Teams. And we've got a large community of colleagues here that use Microsoft Copilot for day-to-day. For example, this discussion that I'm having with you, if we were actually on Microsoft Teams, at the end of it, we will have had just to go to Copilot and say, summarize the discussion. And it will give a beautiful summary. And you can imagine how much that is improving productivity of people in terms of that. The third one I want to talk about is we working with a number of tools, especially what we call Amazon Q, which is a tool that our engineers are using to generate code. Meaning that they are actually taking a requirements document of this is how we want to solve the problem, and they're feeding it to this code generation that uses GenAI. And then instead of hours and hours of them writing the code themselves, they now can just edit the code. And then if they are happy, they put it in. But the GenAI can also scan through the code for what will be possible bugs, security vulnerabilities, significantly changing. What we are also doing is, because this technology is still going through a lot of tuning to deal with what us as engineers call these hallucinations.
Yes.
So naturally, we are not yet at the point where a lot of what we are innovating with, we're feeding it directly to the customers for the Gen AI to decide every interaction. Even though we've done a lot to test a number of scenarios, we are still doing the editing, and in some instance, we do the recommendation to a banker, and the banker can make a sense of whether this makes sense and then communicate to a client. But I have to share with you and the listeners, Mudiwa, that the technology is iterating so fast that I will not rule out that in the next few months, we will be looking across specific use cases where the Gen AI is actually doing very well with reduced levels of hallucinations and engaging clients directly. But of course, because we are a trust institution, we will take a stance of being a fast follower in that regard in terms of that. But a lot of experimentation and innovation is happening with this technology because we are so excited about the prospect of what it will do to really help us to delight our clients and to help them realize their dreams and aspirations.
It's actually really great, and I think maybe we have time for one more thing, and I wanted to, you know, maybe end it off on another, aspect of AI, because you've just described different scenarios and use cases. The one that I wanted to maybe get your sense on from a customer point of view, because the ones that you've just described, a lot of them are internal and, you know, helping, you know, Standard Bank staff to, you know, push themselves up, and also the interaction with the customers around the chatbot. But once again, with the chatbot, we've been seeing a lot of activity in the market around financial advice, you know, through some of these chatbots, you know, that type of thing. Is that something that, you know, you guys are looking at, or do you still believe that rather talk to an actual human being when it comes to that type of thing? And then the last thing is, you are a proper techie, right? But you also work in a very highly regulated environment. How do you make sure that you're pushing and operating at the bleeding edge while still, I guess, playing in the in the box?
Yes. Now, let me first answer the first question on, do we see a world where, you know, a generative AI capability could be advising a client directly? Currently, we don't have any implemented use cases. Okay. However, we have a lot of experimentations and innovations that we are working with along those lines inside the organization. But one of the most important things for us is that the trust that our clients put on us is very important to us. So unless we get to the point where we have fine-tuned this to the extent that we have the highest degree of comfort that it will not hallucinate or do things that we don't want, we'll continue to experiment, continue to improve it. But my sense is that we are not too far away from such a reality happening. If I'm just giving you insights into what is happening in all the labs where this experimentation is going. On the second question of, in a way, maybe I'll paraphrase it to say, you know, how do we continue to innovate at speed in a highly regulated environment? Yeah. The first thing is that our innovation is always within the spirit of making it easier for our client and making us more productive as an organization. We are also a responsible, a law-abiding citizen as well as a corporate citizen. So we pay attention to regulation. We respect regulation. But we also influence a lot in terms of engaging our various regulators to share with them our thought processes, to demonstrate to them that we want to do the right things. And as a result, can we also think about the spirit of the regulation, what it's trying to do, so that we can work together. In a way, this is all about culture. I have this famous analogy that I discuss a lot with colleagues and my engineers, which says, if you really, really want a fast car, if you want to design the fastest car in the world, what you need to have is you need to have very good brakes.
Yes.
Because by having good brakes, it will give the driver the confidence to push it very hard.
Yes.
Because they know if something goes wrong, they've got very good brakes. Now, if I extend that analogy, if you really want to give the driver even better confidence, you must put barriers around the road. So they know if something goes wrong, they can crash on the barrier instead of having a fatal accident.
Yeah.
And this analogy, Mudiwa and listeners, really describes the way we innovate while paying attention to the risk, compliance, and regulatory aspects of our job. We think of it as very good brakes actually allows us to go faster.
Yeah.
But then you got to have a culture where people innovate, they can make decisions quickly. But in a way, you give them these barriers that allow them to make decisions within these barriers so that they can move fast and not be held back by having to think through the governance. And that's really how we think about it. Because in a lot of ways, when you listen to regulation, the purpose of regulation is actually greater good things for society at large.
Yeah. All right. On that note, I think that's a very good place for us to end today's conversation. Interestingly enough, a couple of months ago, I had an opportunity to go on a hot lap experience at BMW at Kaya Lang.
Yes.
And the confidence that those drivers have, they were driving BMW M3s at the time. The amount of confidence that they have in those M3s, the abilities to brake, to turn, to corner is incredible. And I think it speaks to exactly what you said. The moment you made that analogy, it made perfect sense in my head, because I've been in a car with a driver that is almost 100% confident in the tool that they are driving, to say, I can push this to the limit, because when I get to that spot, I'm going to apply the brakes, the car will slow down from whatever we are now down to the right speed. I will be able to turn. We will come back and we'll make it safely to the end. And I can imagine that in the world of technology, that's how you keep innovation going. That's how you keep the engineers, the data scientists, you know, the programmers, people actually excited about the work that they're doing when they're able to, you know, push themselves to the edge. Because I often think about one of the biggest criticisms that is placed on the EU and the European Union has a lot of great regulation. But when it comes to technology, you know, people are saying that they are regulating faster than they're innovating. And it's slowed down so much. So I definitely understand that. And I think that's a good, you know, place for us to end. Just talking to KK about what's going on in the world of Standard Bank, you know, more specifically how they are making use of technology in the personal and private bank in South Africa. That's where we started off, you know, talking about the fact that there's this move towards greater digital adoption. People are primarily banking using the app. We spoke about the role of the banking branch, you know, to say that this continues to be an important channel for a lot of people, especially for some of the more sensitive and complex, you know, financial matters where people want to have that in-face interaction with the financial advisor and all of the experts around the space. Contrasting that with what's happening in other parts of the continent, one of the biggest points he made is that the way you compete in South Africa is different to the way that you compete in other regions, because the type of competition that you are facing in those regions is different. In East Africa and West Africa, you have a lot of mobile money, you know, players. So instantly fintech becomes something different, you know, compared to just, you know, competing against the banks. And he also mentioned that, speaking of the banks, in a place like West Africa, you've got local banks, you've got regional banks, and you've got international banks that all need to be, you know, spoken about in the fray. And then we spoke quite a bit about the infrastructure that is in place. We spent quite a bit of time around the cloud, and he was actually explaining that cloud has been helping them to enable a lot of things. He spoke specifically about the relationship with the likes of Microsoft, but also Amazon Web Services, you know, to say it's been able to help them on the call center side when it comes to having a chatbot. I think you called it, is it Amazon Connect?
Yes,
yeah, Amazon right. Connect, that has been able to, you know, create a tool that's now, you know, handling around, you know, about 50% of queries. It's able to, you know, run through and, you know, arrive at a solution before handing off, you know, to a real world person. And, you know, talking about that AI, to say, where else do we see things going? And one of the things that I've noted is that there's a lot of experimentation that is happening, you know, across the board internally and towards clients, but they are prudent. I think that's the word I'm looking for.
Yes.
They are prudent to say, okay, fine, we're experimenting, but we'll only put the certain thing out when we know that we are confident that this thing will perform as is, because one of the words that KK mentioned a couple of times is the matter of hallucinations. And you can imagine that as a financial organization, that's a huge risk. And a lot of people have that attitude in tech to say, we must break things quickly and then we'll deal with the consequences. But when you're dealing with people's money, it's breaking things fast might come with a lot of risk. So that's been it. We were in conversation with KK. He is the CIO, that is the Chief Information Officer for Standard Bank Group in their private and in their retail and private bank, as well as the CIO for Standard Bank South Africa.
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure. I'm looking forward to coming here again. Thank you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.